horticulturist, landscape designer, garden author, and I'm fortunate to have our producer, Lizzie Steele, in taking care of all the technology. Thank you so much, Lizzie.
What do I owe you for that compliment?
It's Christmas. You'll think of something.
Yeah. I think I already did, so thank you for what, you know. You know what you've done, so
yes,
thank you.
You're welcome. And it is a beautiful morning. It's going to be in the 80s and 70s here in Florida. You know, 65, 70 degrees up near North Florida, down in the 80s in Central Florida and in South Florida. And it's just going to be a beautiful gardening week. We're going to get a little bit of a spotty chance of rainfall, and then the temperatures are going to get cooler. So let's go with something that reminds us of winter. Let's do the dirty word of the day. John Denver.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
And now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And the dirty word of the day is apricity, apricity, and it means the warmth of the sun in winter. And it's apricity, and it's a word that may not be commonly heard in everyday conversations, but it holds a unique charm that captures the essence of a winter's day. Its meaning is rooted in the Latin word apricus, refers to the warmth of the sun on a cold winter day. When you're seeing those trees in the distance and up north when you have snow laying on the ground, or if you're in the cooler part of the winter in the forest, in the Ocala National Forest, and you see the sun coming in, that is apricity. And apricity is a noun that describes the pleasant warmth of the sun during winter, especially when experienced on a cold day. It encapsulates the cozy feeling that can be found in the winter sun rays, providing a sense of comfort and joy. It appears to have entered our language in 1623 when Henry Cockerham recorded or possibly invented it for his dictionary, the English Dictionary, or an interpreter of hard English words. Despite the fact that it is a delightful word for a delightful thing, it never really caught on, and will not be found in any modern dictionary aside from the Oxford English Dictionary. So a way to use it in your everyday conversation is, as I strolled through the park, I couldn't help but be captivated by the apricity that bathed the landscape in a golden glow. Or you could say the delicate flowers seemed to bask in the apricity, their petals glistening with a newfound radiance. And so the dirty word of the day is apricity. And if you can use it somewhere in the conversation, that will bring it back. And it's a well-meaning word about winter time. And I loved it. I thought that's a great word. And so that's the dirty word of the day. And so right now, we are going to be having a great conversation on how to redesign your landscape. And it will be coming up in our next segment. You can also text us at 23680. And then after we speak to our wonderful friend Lance Walheim, the author of Landscaping for Dummies, then you can you can call us at 1-888-455-2967. And it will be good. Just write it up on your phone. Just go ahead and put it in. And keep it forever and call us whenever you need us.
There you go, exactly.
And you can text us and everything. So if you missed any of the first hour, you can check it out on our website, betterlawns.com. And also, I will be posting it on our Facebook page. And if you go to our Facebook page, like us, give us 5 stars. Lizzie and I would love that. We've had so many people doing that, and we appreciate all our new listeners. We're getting listeners from all over the country, Texas, California, and even Michigan, and even up in New York.
That's what makes the world go round.
You know, it's just wonderful. And even outside of the country, we get listeners from Sweden and then also Italy. And it's just fun to watch the stats come in.
Yes, and what I really like is whenever they do text us and tell us what they're having for their morning drink. And let us know, because it's different all across the world. So
yeah, no, it really is. And so we love that. And then also, too, good morning to Mike from Venice. He sent me a beautiful picture of his Panama rose. And I have to tell you, it's a great plant for Florida because it blooms in the wintertime. And South Florida, it's just beautiful. I'm going to be posting it on Facebook, and you don't want to miss that. And then we'll get to Brenda. Brenda, I've got your answer to your question. She's in Ocoee. And send us a perfect text message, and that will be your name and your location, where you're going, and so where you live, actually. And we will be able to help you a little bit better. I've also got gardening questions coming up about desert roses and also powdery mildew. So you want to stay tuned for that. Next is Lance Walheim. We haven't talked to him in a while, so it's a dear friend. We're excited about that. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. Lance Walheim is the author and contributor for over 30 garden books, including Citrus, The Complete Guide to Selecting and Growing More Than 100 Varieties for California, Arizona, the Gulf Coast, and Florida, Roses for Dummies. He was also the senior editor for the last four editions of the new Sunset Western Garden Book, which is considered the Bible of Western gardening, and he just finished updating the second edition of the popular Landscape for Dummies. Lance is an exceptional multi-talented gardener and horticultural expert. He is pioneering new citrus varieties over the last 30 years, but he's also concocting Walheim Ranch Gin, which I am going to ask him about. Joining us from Portland, Oregon is Lance Walheim. Good morning, Lance. It's good to talk with you.
Hey, Teresa. How are you? It's been a while.
It has been a while, and I'm so glad to see have you on. And so, Landscaping for Dummies, it's been updated to the second edition. And tell us, what should a homeowner consider before starting a landscaping project?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things, and planning is one of the most important things, but it really helps to, you know, get out in the backyard, think about whether you're going to remodel or you're actually starting from scratch. What do you want your garden to do for you? Do you want to sit out there in the morning with a cup of coffee, eat dinner out there in the evening? Are you going to want to entertain? Are you going to want a vegetable garden? These are questions you really need to think about when you're out there so that you can plan them in there and, you know, get a garden that is actually for living for you. So planning is a good idea, and it, you know, and it just means getting a, you know, a good piece of paper, doing a scale drawing, and start making little plans about what you see and what you want.
I love that, because it helps save money, because you're not going to be buying everything you need to be doing, and it also saves time and effort. So that is so important.
That, you know, you're definitely right. And then when you're in the backyard and you're looking around, you know, is there things you don't want to see? Are there people possibly looking in your garden? Our backyards are getting smaller. There's no doubt about it. We're living closer to our neighbors. And a lot of times there'll be a two-story house right next to your garden. Can they see into your garden? Do you want some privacy? That's a big issue. Well, maybe is there a view that you want to enhance? Maybe there's one that you want to cover up.
Again, so right, we see these zero lot lines, especially in new developments, where there's only like 15 feet between the houses, and you could literally see in someone's bedroom. What do you suggest for those areas? What would you suggest for privacy?
Well, naturally, a fence is a great way to get some privacy if you need to build one of those. But a lot of the times, they're already there. But some type of overhead where you can create, you know, a little outdoor room where people can't look into it. And then, of course, you can use some. You want to, when you're using a, when you're working on a smaller garden, you naturally want to be concerned about the size of the plants. But if there's something you don't want to see, you can plant something that's a little larger that's going to screen it off.
Right. And so circulation, in your book, Landscaping for Dunnies, what do you mean by circulation?
How are you going to get around in the garden? Where are you going to walk? How are you going to get from one place to another? How are you going to get from inside the house to outside? So you want to think carefully of, you know, where are you going to put your barbecue? How are you going to walk over there? That's really important, as is comfort. You want to make sure that you're, if you're in a, your backyard is a sunny space and it can get really hot, you're going to want to make sure that you provide some kind of shade. Or maybe, and your vegetable garden is in a sunny place, or that you want some kind of screened-in structure where you can get away from the bugs. So there's a lot of things to think about out there.
And so when you're planning and you've decided what you want, what are the next aspects of landscaping that homeowners should consider?
Well, you know, one of the advantages of a smaller space is that you don't have to buy as much material as you would if you had a bigger backyard. So you can spend a little bit more money on quality hardscape, for instance, and you can think carefully about the materials you use, whether you're using flagstone, pavers, brick, or if you're going to build a deck. Really think about getting something that you're going to be living close to the plants, but also to the hardscape. So get something that you really like and a good material. And excuse me. And then also with the plants that you're going to be using, think about long season of color or long season appeal. And not just flowers, although there's some great ones like the long season azaleas and, of course, the ever-blooming roses. But think about texture of the plants, the leaf size and the color. Plants like Nandina, these are plants that are going to look good all the time, and you can build your flower color around. You know, think carefully about color. You don't want too many colors. It's going to be too busy back there. How is the hardscape going to affect the look of your house? Take hints from your house so it all blends together. These are all just places to kind of start and think about your planning. There's going to be a lot of work that's going to be done. You might want some professional help, but, you know, think carefully about what you want and what you need.
I think that's a really, really important tips. And so I love to showcase personalities when I design a landscape. How would you suggest someone think about that, or, you know, what kind of aspect can they incorporate?
Well, you know, that's a really good point. That's about the details. You know, I love to put in garden art, things like, you know, fountains. You know, you can go vertical because you've got smaller space, and of course, there's so many opportunities with containers. And again, even with containers, think about what kind of containers you're going to use, the color, how it's going to blend with the plants. You can really create a wonderful stage if you just think carefully about the things that you choose and the things that you like.
And so this new updated edition, where can people find it?
In the usual places. They can find it online, like Amazon and places like that. It should be pretty widely available.
And so, well, while I have you, I wanted to know what you thought of and how you're using the new USDA Garden Zone map.
You know, I have a saying that I've always used, and that is that all gardening is local. And it's not that the USDA hardy zones aren't useful. They can be. But if that's the only thing that you're using to select your plants, you could be heading for trouble. You know, I use one example all the time. If you just take a look at USDA Zone 8 and think about the various climates that includes Seattle, Washington, area around Southern California, the desert in Arizona, Dallas, Texas, and the panhandle of Florida. That's all in one zone, and those are dramatic climates. Plants are affected by more than just winter cold. They're affected by things like heat and humidity, rain and sun. So it really pays to do a little bit more homework. Now that the USDA zone maps are changing, they're a moving target. you've really got to look around for more information than just that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think that people need to understand that things are different. What is Zone 9 and 10 here in Florida is not the same as San Diego 9 and 10. We have all that humidity and rainfall.
Right, and it, you know, the gentleman that was talking about the hollies earlier, you know, some plants don't go as far south, and a lot of times the plant recommendations you get are just for the northern limit of the plant. Not all plants can be grown in zone 9, 10, and 11, so you need a range, and that just takes a little bit more into account. Out in the west, we rarely use the USDA zones. There's 10 zones or 11 zones, whatever it is. We use the Sunset Western Garden Book zones, which breaks the West into 30 different climates and recommends the plants by those. And that includes much more about an adaptation than just the winter hardiness.
Wow, that's a good, really good point. Now, you have stretched your garden muscles recently, and you've partnered with renowned chef and distiller Eric Olson of Atacastadero's Central Coast Distillery to create the new Walheim Ranch Gin. So tell us, what did you do to create gin?
Well, as most of your listeners know, for a long time I grew specialty citrus, and one of the ones was my favorite was the bergamot sour orange, which is used in Earl Grey tea, various perfumes, and actually in some cooking more and more. It's a big yellow fruit that has a very aromatic, distinctive rind, and so I always wanted to make a gin with a bergamot sour orange, and I met Eric, and we hit it off, and we're actually going to just starting our third batch this year. It's a small batch gin. It's available primarily in California. If you go to WalheimRanchGin.com, we do have a mail order source, but state laws for shipping spirits into the states vary state by state. But if you go there's a mail order source. You put your address in to let you know if you can get it. But it's been a lot of fun, and it's been very successful. We won a double gold medal in an international competition, and it's just something to keep me busy when I'm slowing down in my old age.
I don't think you're slowing down any. How, you've got a new grandbaby. How is he doing?
Oh, they're all the grandkids. We're going to take care of them this afternoon. As a matter of fact, it's his birthday tomorrow. So that'll be fun.
That will be fun. I certainly appreciate it. Okay, so give us the name of your book again, where they can get it, and then also to Walheim Ranch Gin, where we can find out more about that.
Yeah, it's Landscaping for Dummies. It's available in most of the online sources, so it should be pretty widely available. And then if you want more information about Walheim Ranch Gin, you can go to WalheimRanchGin.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Lance. You have a Merry Christmas.
Hey, thanks, Teresa. You too.
All right. That's Lance Walheim, and he is the author of over 30 books, Landscaping for Dummies series. He's got Roses for Dummies series. He is just a wealth of knowledge. So
he's a genius. I love that, and I kind of skimmed through the Roses for Dummies. I'm going, okay, all right, I hear you. I hear you. I was reading, but I hear you.
Yes. creating your own gin, isn't that? That sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Very interesting.
You can use it in a gin and tonic or a martini, and he says it's also good in Negroni and Greyhound and other cocktails. I've never heard of a Greyhound cocktail. I have to look that one up too.
Now you have.
Now I have. It's 100 proof, so it sounds great. So thank you very much to Lance Walheim. And we are going to get to our text messages, 23680. If you'd like to call, 1-888-455-2967. I'm going to be answering your gardening questions, and so we'll get to those, and also more information of what to do in your landscape for December. And it's all about those plants and just planting. Gardening is, you are not a dummy if you garden. I'm Teresa Watkins from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. If you have a gardening question, this is the time to do it. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. Let me know you're out there, and we will go to and answer all your questions. So Brenda Inokoe, she's been very patient. She said, is there a better way to get rid of basket grass than a Roundup, than glyphosate? And so basket grass, here's the dilemma with basket grass. It's really hard to get rid of. It is a spring, summer weed in the shady areas. It doesn't need a lot of water, and it doesn't need a lot of, you know, care. It just grows, and it gets very invasive. So here's what you need to do, Brenda. You can use Roundup to get rid of it. You want to make sure you're using it according to the label. But then what you need to do is pull it out, okay, so that it doesn't go to seed. You want to pull it out before it goes to flower. And then when you get it all taken out, that one time you take it all out, and it comes out really pretty easy, you then want to put down 2 to 3 inches of mulch in that area. So you want it to be very, cover it with mulch. And then next spring, around Valentine's Day, okay, February, okay, and you can equate, Valentine's Day with it, you want to apply a pre-emergent that's going to keep it from coming back. So once you have it, if you don't want to use Roundup, there's really not a lot of chemicals that are available to homeowners to get rid of it. So you're going to have to, you know, pull it all up by hand, make sure it's all gone, and then put down that mulch. And then in February, use a pre-emergent for broadleaf weeds, and you won't get it. And it'll get less and less, okay? So let me know how you do, Brenda. So Mike in Venice, he sent me a beautiful picture of the Panama rose in his landscape. And this is a lovely flowering shrub. It blooms in the wintertime, which is great for Central Florida and then South Florida. It's going to be too chilly for you up in North Florida because it doesn't like to freeze too much. But it is also called the Bush Penta. And it gets to be about 4 feet tall. And it's a beautiful, beautiful soft pink. And you can... doesn't have a lot of pest problems. It does best in full sun to part shade, and it is moderately drought tolerant, so you don't need to water it a lot, even in South Florida. And you can maintain it at 3 to 5 feet. Does real well underneath windows, and butterflies love it. So that is the Panama rose, and you can find it easily in all the nurseries and box stores.
With that frost, we actually had it had a lot of frost. I almost swear it froze where we were at last week. That bulb that you gave me,
yes,
I didn't want to trust putting anything on it and it getting through in the coldness. Uh-huh. So I took it and I put it in my utility room.
Uh-huh. Okay, and it did fine, right?
It's done fine so far. Now I'm scared to take it back out because I'm afraid I'm gonna get another alert on my phone and not be at home.
Well, it should be just fine. So Jim in Paisley, and that's Paisley, Florida, not Paisley, Scotland, which was my big, a few years back, I made the big mistake.
Right.
And so he sent me a picture of a blooming plant that was coming up underneath a tree. And he says, what do you think this is? And I will tell you, Jim, it is called a Ecomus comosa. And it is originally from South America. We know it as the pineapple lily. And it grows to about 2 feet tall, and it spreads out about 2 feet. And it's not picky about the sunlight conditions. It can take full sun. It can take the shade. And it just needs to be watered on a kind of regular basis. I would say probably once every couple of weeks. And it is a beautiful plant. So thank you for sending me the photograph of it. I will post it and post pictures of one that's in full bloom on our Facebook page. And I would love to do that. And so... thank you for sending me the plant ID. I love that. Okay, Teresa, what is this? What is this? And so Anne in Hudson, she says, can we plant sod over dead sod that we sprayed with Roundup, or should it be removed? Well, Anne, I'm going to tell you, it should be removed because you want to have good contact with the soil. You want your roots to touch the soil. So I don't mind the Roundup part. Just go ahead, but remove the grass so it touches completely, and that'll be your best way to get your turf off successfully. So great question. Don't skimp on the labor. Just take it off and make sure you have good contact with the soil, and it will be just fine. So Rebecca in Citrus Springs, she sent me a picture of her very first desert rose, and it has spots on it. She hasn't fertilized it yet, but she doesn't know, or she says she's had it for about 5 weeks, and they don't get watered very much. So she put it in her south-facing window inside her house first where it got plenty of light, but because of the spots, she moved it out onto her patio that is screen-covered. It gets direct sun, but she's afraid to spray it. I believe it may be brown spot, but I'm not sure why this would get brown spot inside my house when nothing else has brown spot. So what she has later on is a powdery mildew on her desert rose. The leaves had a soft, kind of like a soft, transparent mint green film on the leaves. And that's due to poor air circulation. We see it on crepe myrtles. We see it on plants that are up close to the house. And it's the humidity, poor air circulation, and also sometimes, you know, how we water, what time of the day we water. So it's going to need, Rebecca, a fungicide like BioAdvance 3-in-1 Insect and Disease Spray, which I love. It's really a really great fungicide. Garden Safe fungicide or even Bonide Captain Jack's Copper fungicide will work, and you want to apply it according to the label. So moving it away from screens, you want, again, to have plants out about 2 feet away from your screen so they get some good air circulation. They're not right up close to the screen or a wall area, a corner of the house where there's, you know, you don't get air in behind the corners. And so that's going to, you know, going to prevent a lot of your insect and disease issues. But it is powdery mildew, and I will post it on our Facebook page today later on this afternoon. You can always catch a lot of things on our Facebook page after, in the afternoon, we have the show uploaded, and I will post that for you too. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680. We got another segment coming up, and we'd like to thank Lance Walheim for joining us today from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. I got a email from Dave, and he's asking me, he's really kind of frustrated with citrus greening. He's got a Myers lemon, and he just says, has there been any new progress made? And I will tell you, Dave, I have got a couple of shows and podcasts over the last year that I'm going to send you so you can listen to it. But there is a new variety, and it's not necessarily new. It's just they've just found that it's a little bit more citrus greening resistant. And the citrus greening is called Hung Long Bing, and it turns the fruit yellow, and the leaves all are mottled and yellow, and the fruit gets very bitter. So it really destroys the tree. But the University of Florida research has found that the lemons and limes are a little bit more greening resistance. And then also there is a one that was developed in 2009 that they found is really good. It's a mixture or it's a hybrid tangerine and orange, and it's called Sugar Bell. And that one they found is highly resistant to citrus greening. So in the short term, you want to make sure that you're fertilizing correctly. It's very, very important that new growth is resistant to the psyllid vector, which is it spreads that disease. Any citrus trees that you have in your yard that do have it, I would basically remove and start off with a new stock, new citrus tree, and make sure that it's getting the proper water, that it's getting the proper fertilizer, And that means that when it's got new growth, you're going to want to spray to keep the psyllid off of it. So, Dave, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you an email with all that information for you. And look for the sugar bell, and that'll be much better. So we like that. And then the Panarose rosebush that Mike has, he says that it is 7 by 7 foot. 7 by 7, he didn't cut it back this summer. And that's great, because that would be the off time to cut it, Mike. So you would like to cut it after it blooms. So I would say late spring, early spring, and then let it grow, and it will still bloom in the wintertime. I wouldn't cut it after the month of May. And that way your blooms will then reappear and be ready to go in the wintertime. And then he's scraped his yard, covered it with 3 inches of good topsoil. Should he use rice seed or a fertilizer for the winter? And that's Bob asking that. Teresa, I had my side yard scraped and covered with 3 inches of good topsoil. Should I just sow rice seed in or a fertilizer for the winter? I would say if you've got, the topsoil on it, I would just put rice seed on it. You don't want to encourage any kind of growth in the wintertime. The turf goes dormant in the winter. There's no reason to do it, but the rice seed will do really good. And when it declines in the springtime, will add nutrients to your turf and soil too as well. So I would just go ahead, put the rice seed in, and wait to fertilize in the springtime around the end of March, first part of April, and then go from there. Okay, really great question. Because there's no reason to fertilize, even in the down in South Florida area, in the wintertime. You don't want to have that new growth there. Nope, Lizzie doesn't care. I looked at Lizzie.
And I kind of shrugged my shoulders. Okay. I'm like, okay, sounds good.
1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. So your house plants, you're getting a lot of new ones in. Maybe you've got the poinsettia. Maybe you have a cyclamen, which is very, very pretty. And it blooms in the wintertime. It is a plant that will go dormant after it blooms. So you think it may have died, but it has not. So I'm going to be telling you about that in the next few weeks. Don't throw your cyclamen away. And I so funny, because I had a client I was visiting with yesterday, and she says to me, I told her I wanted to use bromeliads in the area. Oh, she goes, no, Teresa, I kill bromeliads. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, I kill every bromeliad I ever had. And I said, really? Because I said, they're really, really hard to kill. You know that big one that we saw at iHeart party?
Yes.
And so she said, yeah, it just dies. And I go, well, you do know that the bromeliad is an epiphyte, and once it blooms, the main plant will die, but it'll grow new pups underneath. It'll get 3 to 4 pups, and you just divide those up, and you have 5 new plants or 3 new plants. And she goes, I didn't know it did that. So every time the bloom died,
She threw it away.
Mm. And so you don't want to do that. So don't take it to heart if you think your bromeliad has died and that you're causing it. Once the plant blooms, then it just starts to decline. It takes about 6 months, but then that main plant will start to turn brown. The leaves will die. You can literally probably just pull it right out of the pot. But on the outside of that plant, you'll have new ones growing. So it grows exponentially. So 1 year you have one, the next year you have 3, the next year you have 10. And so you have a whole bromeliad plantation before you get finished.
She's just out here throwing pups in the garbage.
And so don't think it's died. And so the same thing with cyclamens. And we'll be talking about that in the next few weeks to come. And so I have a, I don't know who this is from, and I don't know where they live. But last few years I've grown cotton. She's going to make a dog bed out of it. But last year I didn't get any. I think because I planted them too closely. Was it a bad year for cotton in general? That's a great question.
Well, it's Orlando phone number, it seems like.
Okay.
So,
Okay, so I would say I would have to check. I'm not, I don't farm and I don't keep track of cotton crops. So I'm going to get back to you next week on that. I'm writing that down. Was it a bad year for cotton? A couple of things that happened this year was, it's last year. The rainfall, we didn't have a drought last year, but we had one this year. So I don't know when your time frame is, if you're talking about this last spring or in 2022. So I don't know. So I'm going to research that, and I will have an answer for you next week.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering. I mean, I know that some parts of Florida you can see some cotton growing, but
yeah, North Florida especially.
I think we're a little too far south for it.
That could be the case too. I know people have grown cotton, mm-hmm. and I've seen it grown at extension offices as a specimen,
right?
But not as a general whole crop. Okay, so I don't know how many she or he grew.
So that's
but I have to tell you this funny story.
Go ahead.
So my son, the wonderful chef, my son Derek, River and Fort in St. Augustine, you have to go by.
It's amazing.
It's wonderful. And when he was 2 to 3 years old, he was still sucking his thumb. And I was a long time thumb sucker too when I was little, so I didn't have any qualms about it. But he would take a cotton ball, and he would run it underneath his nose, and he would just
the softness.
Relax, just the softness and relax with it. It was just too cute.
Aww.
And it was when I took him on a vacation with the kids through South Carolina and Georgia, and he saw the whole fields, acres and acres, hundreds of acres of cotton. It was just like he went to heaven.
Oh, I bet. He didn't jump out the window.
He didn't jump out the window, but he knew where cotton came from, so it was really great. So I think it's a fun thing to have kids grow as cotton.
Yes.
I'd like to thank Lance Walheim, Landscaping for Dummies. It's in its second edition. It's been updated. You're going to want to check that out, especially if you think you can't grow anything. It's a really great book. And then also Walheim Ranch Gin. I'm fascinated by that, so I'm going to find out more about that. And then also Dana Venrick with Quality Green Specialists, our other advertisers. And he's wonderful. The Native Nursery is wonderful. They're very helpful there. Dana has so much knowledge on plants and shrubs and trees. Great time to get a fruit tree, so check that out. We will be updating our Facebook page and posting the show. You can always listen to it on iHeartRadio. So, Lizzie, thank you very much for a great show.
Oh, thank you. And thank you to our listeners. We have the best listeners at the station that I have ever experienced. Also, go to our website, WFLAOrlando.com, because iHeart is granting your Christmas wish. So go on there and in order to try to get your Christmas wish achieved.
There
you go.
Yeah, there you go. That would be great. And so... So he's in Windermere. So the cotton grower is in Windermere. Thank you very much. If you have a garden question, you can always go to our Facebook page, and write the question there, or you can go to betterlawns.com and I will answer you as soon as I can. We will do that. And so I'm looking forward to next week. More Christmas items to come. And from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, we have, they're great makers of organic mosquito bits and mosquito dunks.
And I just put some of mine out when we put our brand new sod out. And sure enough, I have not seen too many mosquitoes.
I was in Mount Dora last night and the mosquitoes were terrible. So yes, they need to use mosquito bits and dunks. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, I'm Teresa Watkins. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. And this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Again, make sure you go to our website, WFLAOrlando.com, because we're giving away some really cool stuff on our page, WFLAOrlando.com.